Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Good afternoon and welcome to Engage for Success Radio. Today there's been a change to the published show. Unfortunately, our original guest hasn't been able to join us. So we're going to be talking today about the Engage for Success. I can't say the word today. That's impossible, isn't it? Engage for Success tags, our thought and action groups, and what we're doing within those. And I'm going to be talking to our research director, Gary. So I'll introduce Gary shortly. So I'm Jo Dodds, your host for today. I'm a social engagement consultant working with the Engage for Success movement, Leading on Digital. The movement is an inclusive movement committed to the idea that there's a better way to work by releasing more of the capability and potential of people at work. And we spread the word about employee engagement and shine the light on good practice. We're widely supported across the UK, involving the public, private and third sectors. If you go to our website, engagesuccess.org, you can use the link at the top to join our newsletter. And if you tweet, please share your thoughts using our hashtag, which is #E4S, the number 4. And also come and join in our LinkedIn group. And we also have a Yammer group, which if you go to engagesuccess.org/Yammer, you can request to join that group. All those links are at the top of the website, so you don't need to remember them. Please do go there and come and join us in any of those platforms that appeal to you. And if you listen to our shows regularly and you enjoy them enough to make the effort, I really encourage you to take the time to go to our iTunes profile and give us a rating. I guess you could still do that even if you don't like them, but preferably it'd be a good one. So my guest today is Gary Gill, who's our new research director. So hi, Gary. Thank you for joining me, especially at such short notice.
Yeah, no problem, Jo. Good afternoon. I'm very pleased to be here.
So this is a bit sort of baptism by fire. How long have you been with us now?
I joined in November, so just under 3 months now. But with the Christmas break sort of breaking things up, the time seemed to have raced by, and there's 101 things that I had in mind that I thought that I would get done by the end of week one, but still slowly working my way through the list. But I'll get there.
Yes, exactly. So tell us a bit more about you and your career to date, so we sort of get an idea of what you've done up until joining us in November.
Well, I'm currently on secondment from the civil service, which doesn't sound hugely exciting. The department that I was in was HM Revenue and Customs, and they kindly released me for a year and a half. So I've got a nice sort of 18-month run, which, you know, hopefully I'll get an awful lot done in that time. And funny enough, I started my career in what was the Inland Revenue back in sort of 1980, 81, something like that. Only stuck it for a few months and vowed never to return. But in that intervening period, that's where the sort of the colourful bit comes in. Because for those of a similar age to me, you'll remember that the 1980s was a period when everybody was encouraged to be very entrepreneurial. And I really bought into that. So in the sort of 1980s, I sort of set up a number of businesses. I had a removals business because there was a massive property boom at the time. And that led to a couple of other spin-off businesses. But probably the most exciting one was through my connections at the time with, you know, estate agents, because I was getting people to move house. I got to hear of an amusement arcade that came up for sale. So I bought that and turned that into a nightclub, which turned out to be the first rave club in Devon. That's my one claim to fame. So I had that in the late 80s into the early 90s. I know. Yeah, it was a bit of a winding road. So did that until the early 90s. Sold the club in the early 90s. Then I thought I'd fancied a change of scenery and quite fancied emigrating. But I didn't have the qualifications, so I went to Exeter University, got a mining degree, went to work in South Africa for a little bit. I was in a gold mine near Johannesburg, and then came back in the late 90s, and that's when I returned to the civil service, having that sort of colourful spell outside. And I've been with HM Revenue and Customs ever since. reason, I suppose, I also sort of add, I was just going to say, the reason that I mention all of that is because it means that I've worked in very small business, micro businesses, really. The one in Johannesburg, you know, a big multinational company, and of course the civil service is a very, very large organisation. So it's given me a real sort of insight into how employees engage differently according to what type of business, what type of organisation that they're working in.
Yeah, I think we've got a bit of a delay on here, so I apologise if I sound like I'm interrupting at times for the rest of the interview. As you say, a really varied background, and interesting as well that for people who don't know very much about the civil service, I think it's fair to say that there's probably a sort of preconceived idea that it's perhaps not so much an exciting place to be as some of the other organisations might be. Given your changes in your career and the fact you're back there, and not only that, you've been encouraged to spend 18 months in a different organisation, that doesn't sound like that will be what your experience is of the civil service. Is that fair to say?
No, you've hit the nail on the head, because I suppose if I'm honest, I joined the civil service back in the late 90s. Ideally, in my head at the time, it was going to be a fairly short-term measure, just maybe 4, 5, 6 years. And then I thought, well, maybe then I'll leave again and try something new. But it's been surprisingly varied and interesting and, dare I say, exciting at times. Whether that's because I happened to have found pretty exciting and innovative roles to do in HM Revenue and Customs, but when I look around and I speak to people across the whole department, there is very much a real engagement with the work that people are doing. But if I also dare say it, and this is a sort of open secret really, a lot of civil service departments have quite low engagement scores. So there seems to be sometimes a disconnect between what people see and do on a daily basis, I suppose, what's in their immediate control, and how they see the department as a whole. So, it was that one point that really interested me in employee engagement. You know, what is it? What is employee engagement? Is it how you feel about what you see every day? Is it about how you feel about your organisation? I mean, now I think, well, it's a combination of all those things and more. But that's what interested me, so that when this secondment came up, I sort of jumped at it, really, to get a bit more of an insight as to how this, you know, how that sort of dynamic works.
Mm-hmm. And is this something that's encouraged within your team to sort of spread your wings, or is it just that it just happened that you found out about this at the right sort of moment?
I think most departments have various sort of development programs, and you are very much encouraged to steer your own career. So it's very much down to you that if you really do want to have fewer roles over the course of your career, I think the opportunity is there. If you're somebody like myself, that likes to change every few years, you know, you can actually make it happen. And secondments outside of the civil service seem to be very much encouraged. There is very much an appetite to bring back skills, knowledge from either smaller organisations or organisations where there's a completely different ethos. Bring it back and see what you can, what will transfer and make things better.
Yeah,
which is a very long way, a long way of saying, yes, you are encouraged.
Excellent. So tell us a bit about your role with us as you see it so far, given you've only been here 3 months. But for those people who know anything about the movement, you know, you'll realise that each role becomes the role that the person who comes into it carves out for themselves, really. There's no sort of real structure, it's not the right word, you know, it's not that this is the role and these are the parameters and this is all you can do. It's very much come in and what do you want to do, what do you think you can do, you know, how can you improve things. So what's the role that you have as you see it, and what have your first few months with us been like?
I think that's a pretty good description. I think there isn't a formal strict pathway into a lot of the roles in Engage for Success. There's a general direction, if you like. And that was the thing I think took me a good few weeks to get my head around and to adapt to that. As research director, I mean, I don't see myself as any sort of employee engagement specialist. In fact, I feel that I'm here to learn myself. But I think what I do bring is sort of structure and bit of a framework, I think, to some, particularly for the new thought and action groups. I mean, there's various thought and action groups that are all available, you know, accessible, all details of them are all available on the EFS website. There's the regional ones, but then there's the topic and sector thought and action groups, and those are the ones that I oversee. And those groups are where people sort of get together to home in and research a specific topic or an industry sector. And I think what's changed over the last 6 or 7 years, because EFS has evolved, I think what I'd like to see for the new thought and action groups, the new tags, is a bit more of a framework. Not to actually constrain innovation and creative ideas, but if there's a bit of a framework that people know how these groups ought to run, it ensures that they don't actually run out of steam 6 months into it. So this framework is something that I've seen in the most successful thought and action groups. I'm trying to apply it to the new ones so that people can feel confident that, you know, they know roughly where the group's going, you know, what is likely to pop out at the other end, and broadly when. And it does away with the group wasting time on, you know, trying to organise itself. Let me do that.
Yeah, I'll reinventing the wheel.
The framework. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. What I didn't want was every single tag, well, as you describe it, every single tag reinventing the wheel every time one is set up. And that's been very encouraging. In fact, I've noticed it seems to have really encouraged more volunteers to come forward in the last few months. This month alone, we've got 3 brand new tags starting, plus there's lots of activity with some of the existing ones. So it is all, it's looking really encouraging, really encouraging.
Lovely. So what are some of the things that you're talking about putting in as far as that sort of structure piece? What sort of guidelines are you thinking will help the tags to set up very quickly without having to, as we said, sort of make it up as they go along, reinvent the wheel and so on?
Well, I want to avoid giving the impression that it's too restrictive, because it really isn't. The idea is to make it easier to set up one of the tags.
Yeah.
But clearly defined roles, you know, you obviously need somebody, a figurehead, if you like, a tag lead. You do need a coordinator as well. I think the key thing that may not have been considered in a huge amount of detail in the past is the question of funding. Because while most of the tags either need no money or very little money, sometimes things like transcription costs, if there's a survey or something like that, it can run into a few thousand pounds. And if each group hasn't really considered, you know, who might pay for that or how might the funds be, how they might be found, they only give it some thought 6 months down the road, there's a real risk that, you know, some of that enthusiasm, that initial enthusiasm, is lost. So by getting people to think about, well, where might this funding come from? Who might offer sponsorship? What might sponsors want in return? I think those are all the questions that I'm trying to find answers to. And again, to make sure that each of the tags has got the best chance of getting to the end goal, and whether it's a piece of research, whether it's a conference, whatever the final outcome is, making sure that each group has got the best possible chance of succeeding.
So you mentioned there were three new tags that are being talked about. What can you reveal what those topics are?
I certainly can, I certainly can. There's one on communication, and I was quite surprised that there wasn't an existing communication tag before. So I'm really pleased to see that one's will be up and running, well, after tomorrow. Tomorrow, hopefully, is when each of these three tags are going to get the thumbs up from the E4S steering group, which oversees all the tags, to make sure that we're comfortable with putting the E4S banner and promoting each of them. So there's a communications one first of all. Then there's one on organisational integrity. And again, given that that's one of the four enablers, again, it was a bit of an eyebrow raiser to see that there wasn't an actual tag about that already. So, again, really delighted that one's up and running. And then there's a third one, the Engagement Toolkit for Line Managers, which is a tag which is, well, does what it says on the tin, really. The idea is that there's going to be some real useful resources available via the website for line managers so that people can come in, dip in and out of the website, find some good stuff, some good resources that they can actually apply back at work. And that's what that one's working towards. As I say, kicking off tomorrow.
Lovely. So they get sort of, there's a posh word for ratified by the group tomorrow. But how do people, if they've got ideas for new tags, how do they go about sort of kicking things off? What's the process? At the moment, albeit it might be
the process really is contact me, really, because
that's easy.
via the website, or I think my phone number's on there anywhere somewhere, but certainly via the website you can get hold of me. But contacting me means that because I've got access to the whole sort of E4S community, once there is the germ of an idea, if you like, I can put that out there and find out whether there's anybody else that's already involved in E4S who might be willing to jump aboard and join the group.
Yeah.
Also offer suggestions. Yeah. Make sure that it's something that's not already been done. Possibly point to existing research, which will speed things up. So my role is to oversee the groups to make sure that each one is doing a discrete piece of work. I suppose making sure that some of the groups don't bite off more than they can chew.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we do want to be a bit ambitious in what could be achieved. So it's getting the balance right.
Yeah. So of the tags that are existing and have been around for a while, and we have quite a few of them, are there any sort of bits of news from them that you'd like to share?
There's a few events coming up, and also there's one or two where they've existed for maybe 2, 3, 4 years, and there have been achievements, but also the landscape's changed a little bit. But some of the events coming up, there's the barriers tag has got research that's coming out in early summer. We've got a not-for-profit toolkit, which we should be seeing during the spring. I attended a meeting with the Cross Cultures tag. That's one of the ones that's pretty well established. There's very much been the thinking that, we have actually achieved a lot of what we set out to do. you know, do we need to change direction? Do we need to take on something fresh? Does the group need to be refreshed? So I think none of the groups stay still forever. You know, they're all ongoing, they're all at different stages. And again, that's my role to keep things chugging along and make sure nothing goes stale.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a few other bits and pieces that sort of you get involved in, have an interest in as part of your role. We were talking about the team meeting the other day about the Building Our Industrial Strategy Government Green Paper. Tell us more about what's happening there.
Well, I'm pretty interested in what's going on at the moment. We are living in really interesting times. And I think the most obvious one in this country is Brexit, which, you know, we hear about a lot of the challenges, but I do believe that there's a lot of opportunity for employee engagement. And I also think that it's even more critical to help Britain find its new place in the economic world. So I think Brexit's something where we really need to, when I say we, Engage for Success needs to really make sure its voice is heard. Now, last week, maybe 10 days ago, the government produced its Building Our Industrial Strategy. It's a green paper, which means that it's a consultation document. E4S is going to be responding to that in conjunction with the CIPD. And I think that's just the sort of opportunities that we need to take to make sure that we keep employee engagement, you know, really, really on the radar. As well as E4S as well, make sure our voice is heard, along with the voices of the people that are part of the movement.
Yeah. It's interesting, I was having a conversation with a local events organiser in Kent, where I live, just before we came on the show, talking about an event that they're running all about business growth, and Cathy's coming down to speak at it, and I was talking about, you know, what she was going to be talking about, and we were discussing with speakers, and I said, oh, you know, what are the other topics? I said, you know, where does that fit with everything else? And I think they've got something like 8 speakers, and the organiser said, oh, it's the only one focused on people. And I just thought, oh, that's why we need to be there. So talking about business growth, and they've only got 1 person out of 8 talking about the people aspect of it, and you just think that's half the time, you know, the challenge, isn't it, that the people bit is seen as separate thing rather than actually what's driving most of the rest of it one way or the other.
Yes, it seems obvious, but, you know, and I actually do say this from the position of having, you know, run a business, albeit it was a nightclub and it was the 1980s, but even something like that, the actual people that are involved in that business is central, absolutely central to the success or otherwise of the business. But all too often it does seem as though, you know, consideration about employee engagement is a bit of an afterthought. So, you know, all other considerations about the business go into the mix, and there is just a presumption, I think, that, you know, if everything else is done okay, employee engagement will naturally follow. But it doesn't seem to be the case. It just isn't the case. It doesn't automatically follow. You know, I think it is something that has to be worked at. I think there are organisations that get it right, and it's just there almost from day one. But I think for probably 99% of all other organisations, you know, it needs to be actively pursued, followed, advocated, and getting back to the industrial strategy paper, that's what we want to get across, I think, the fact that employee engagement does need to be one of the considerations, one of the pillars in the government strategy.
Yeah, I remember we all looked at the, it was a list of 10 areas or something, wasn't it? And, you know, people were throwing comments in around, oh, it doesn't say this and it only says that. And it didn't seem to really focus on the people bit as strongly as we would hope, really, did it?
I think it's implicit. I think it's implicit in a number of the pillars in the document. I would have liked to have seen it more explicit. I think employee engagement has to be there for some of the points made in the paper to actually succeed. But I think I'd be a bit more heartened, you know, if it was really emphasised that that was one of the considerations, that, you know, it's presumed that engagement has to be high in order for those pillars to actually succeed.
Yeah,
it comes back to what we were saying earlier, so, that there is this presumption that if you get it right, if, you know, if you get the business right, engagement will follow. But, you know, we just need to be more explicit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that sort of just leads me into the last two or three minutes of the show to think about our new closer working relationship with the CIPD. I know that's one of the areas you're looking at, the research that they're doing, the research that, that we're doing, the things that we're getting involved in, and, you know, the industrial strategy being a good example, that, you know, there's more opportunity to work with them and share information with each other. So how do you see that moving forward?
Well, I think both organisations are sort of coming from a similar similar worldview, if you like, you know, the importance of employee engagement. I'd be amazed if there were not lots of opportunities to sort of cross-pollinate ideas. I mean, I've got a meeting this week with the CIPD looking at the research that they carried out and what they've got lined up, and then looking at the tags that we've got up and running and the ones that are coming through over the next few months to see whether there are opportunities for, you know, one side to feed into the other and vice versa, but also to make sure that we're not reinventing the wheel. With my research director hat on, you know, that's going to be my focus over the next few months with the CIPD.
Yeah, excellent. Well, all sounds very exciting. So let's just clarify to finish off firstly, how people can find out about the tags, and then what they need to do if they want to get involved.
Links to all the tags are on the E4S website. They're pretty easy to find. I think over the next few months they'll be even easier, because that's one of the things that that I've also set out to do, to make sure that all the tag pages have been updated with some of the more recent successes available by links on those web pages.
And that's under the Get Involved. Just to say, it's the Get Involved section of the navigation bar. And as you said earlier, there's the local thought and action groups, and the topic and sector thought and action groups, the latter being the ones that we're particularly talking about today. Sorry, carry on. I was just wanting to clarify.
Yep, sure. No, I was just going to say all the links are available on the website, but if there's any difficulty in actually finding anything, people are welcome to email me, gary@engageforsuccess.org, and I'll come straight back, hopefully with an answer.
Or at least a nice, polite email saying that you'll go and find it.
Yeah.
Lovely. So it's great. One of the great things about having secondees is how much new energy there is every time we have a changeover. And, you know, we had plenty of energy last year with Jacqueline and Anne in position. And it's just great to, you know, even sort of up that by having new people coming in with fresh ideas and fresh energy to review what we're doing and do something different and better and all those other things. So thank you, Gary.
You're welcome. Cheers, Joe.
So to let you know what we're going to be talking about next week, assuming our guest comes, Joe Moffat will be speaking with Kevin Ames of OC Tanner, and they're going to be talking about the power of appreciation. So we look forward to speaking to you again next week.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.